You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to the For I Will Be With You podcast for the 32nd week of the year from August 5th to August 11th, covering Leviticus 24:5 to Leviticus 25:36. My name is Baruch, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'll be your host today. We're now pretty deeply into the book of Leviticus, starting to go over a number of sort of the finer points of observance of the Israelites in the tabernacle in the wilderness. Leviticus 24:5 and 24:6 says, "You shall take fine flour and bake it into 12 loaves. Each loaf shall be 2/10 ephah. You shall place them in 2 stacks, 6 in each stack, upon the pure table before God." Okay, so what this all means is this is an instruction to the priests to make loaves of bread that are placed on a special table outside the tabernacle, outside the inner part of the tabernacle, on this every Sabbath. These were known as the show breads. This was also done at the temple in Jerusalem. And they were then left on this table during the week, and they would be eaten the following Sabbath. One thing that's interesting about this this detail is that nobody knows exactly what these loaves of bread look like. One thing that everyone's pretty sure is they didn't look like a regular loaf of bread. They had an unusual shape, and they were put at the table itself wasn't really like a table. It was more like it looked more like a shelf. So there's a lot of discussion in the biblical commentary about what these things look like. You can see interesting renderings done by various artists about what they look like and so forth. And to me, this discussion evokes a sort of a puzzle that we hear sometimes when people explain how they become sober. It's this kind of mysterious process. It's like it reminds me of these loaves of bread that got baked on God's command, but nobody knows exactly what they look like, or this mysterious table that served a holy purpose, but we don't know exactly how it was structured. And in this way, in our own stories, a sober breakthrough is usually masked in mystery. You know, and it doesn't really matter as long as it worked, right? If you had your sober moment, your breakthrough, you woke up, but that is a miracle. And it relates to another small miracle about these loaves of bread, which is that they, according to commentary, they stayed fresh all week, even though they were left outside. So that's a small miracle in the food department, but it's like us too. We can remain fresh despite extended periods of addiction. I've seen this so many times, and someone has a run, you know, it's like they're kind of going into hibernation. When they come back out, then they're fresh, they're back to themselves. And we don't dry out like week-old bread the way it should be dried out and rotten after a week. Leviticus 25:1 to 25:4, it's a little bit of a long verse. It says, "God spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, 'Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, when you come into the land that I give you, the land shall observe a Sabbath rest for God. For 6 years you may sow your field, and for 6 years you may prune your vineyard, and you may gather in its crop. But the seventh year shall be a complete rest for the land, a Sabbath for God. Your field and you shall not sow, and your vineyard you shall not prune.'" So what the Bible is describing here is the sabbatical year, the Shemitah year. So it's the seventh year, like the seventh day. It's the seventh, every seventh year, there's a rest for the land. the land is to lie fallow for the seventh year, and you're not supposed to work it. And incidentally, this is where the concept of an academic sabbatical comes from, that every seventh year, a college professor is allowed to take a year off and do independent work and not have to worry about regular work. It's the same general concept. This is where it's inspired from. The sabbatical year gives us a way to think about responsibility we need to take for ourselves, along with the faith that we need to have in God to provide for us. Yes, God provides for us, but we must do our part. On the seventh year, God will take care of us. The land must rest. We can be free from the hard work of farming so we can concentrate on a relationship with God. In modern life, the sabbatical year concept can help us remember not to get overly caught up in physical wealth and possessions. If you're working 7 days a week, you're not having faith in God to provide for you. You're thinking you alone are responsible for your wealth, and chances are you aren't satisfied with what you get. And guess what? You never will be. Obviously, I'm not talking about situations where people absolutely need to work all the time. That's different. I have a lot of respect and empathy for that. I'm talking about people who already have everything they need but just keep working because they want more. This feeling of driver of addictive acting out. You get tired and stressed by it all, that a drink or drug seems like a great way to tune out. It's only when you release yourself from this treadmill and accept that God is taking care of you, provided you do your part, then you will be happy with what you've been given. In Leviticus 25:2, God says, "When you come into the land that I give you, the land shall observe a Sabbath rest for God." So why does there's a juxtaposition here of two concepts? So whenever there's two ideas next to each other in the Bible, it's always interesting to interpret. And so it says, when you come into the land that I give you, is combined or is next to the phrase, the land shall observe a Sabbath rest for God. So the idea is these two things are connected. One interpretation is that God wants to make sure that the Israelites understand that occupancy in the land is a privilege, that the land is a gift to the Israelites, one that can be taken back. It's really more like a loan. If the Israelites cannot treat the land with respect and follow an instruction given by the one who gave it, they do not deserve to keep it. The land is not theirs. In the same way, nothing that we have is really ours. Everything we have is a gift from God, or a loan. Money, property, and prestige, those three big problems of vanity that can cause so much trouble in addiction, they're not even ours to fret about. Isn't that kind of strange? Like all this worry that we do, it's about something that isn't even really ours. And if we can release ourselves from the delusion that we own them, we would find peace. Pride of ownership blinds us to God's will and causes coveting and resentment, which drives addiction. Leviticus 25:4 says, "But the seventh year shall be a complete rest for the land, a Sabbath for God. Your field you shall not sow, and your vineyard you shall not prune." So it's easy to read about sabbatical year and think, all right, well, the Israelites had to skip farming for a year. But there's actually a lot more to it than that. You have to realize that in those days there were no supermarkets, or there wasn't even much in the way of food storage. You ate whatever your fields produced in a given year. Okay? If you didn't have a harvest, you were going to starve. That was the normal order of things. So in order to leave your fields fallow for a year, you actually had to grow enough food in the sixth year to last for 3 years. Okay? Think about it like this. The crop that you had to that crop had to feed you in the sixth year, because you were eating in the sixth year, had to feed you in the seventh year when you weren't farming, and had to feed you in the eighth year while you were waiting for the eighth year crop to grow. You had to have a lot of faith in God to provide. And what the tradition tells us is that there was really sort of like a miracle every sixth year, there was like a bumper crop that would last for 3 years. And I think for us in recovery, this is a reminder, this verse can be a reminder that sometimes we just have to hope or ask that God will do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. To trust in God that things will work out. And at some point that might seem hard to believe, but if we're working a good program, we can find the spiritual strength to believe. Leviticus 25:14 goes on to a new but connected subject. It says, when you make a sale to your fellow or make a purchase from the hand of your fellow, do not aggrieve one another. So you're supposed to be honest and straightforward in business, not overcharging or squeezing people for a low price. That's what the verse means when it says aggrieving. Don't aggrieve one another. Here, God himself is telling us to deal honestly with one another, yet it's tempting to play hardball. Everybody likes to play hardball. Everybody likes a good deal. I like a good deal. I don't like to pay too much. I want to get paid a lot. I'm like a lot of other people, okay? But there is a limit, and there's an appropriate way to do this, and there's an inappropriate way to do this. And the 12th step of AA is a reminder of what you're supposed to do. As it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. What does it mean to practice these principles in all our affairs? It means, generally, to conduct yourself with dignity and integrity in the world outside of AA. If AA is a program of rigorous honesty, so should your dealings be in the work world. And unfortunately, this is a hard thing to live up to all the time, but it's something to aspire to and something to work on. It's possible, you know, and we've seen this in AA, that people can be really wonderful human beings inside the rooms, but very crooked or not good people outside the rooms, okay? This is not a path to true sobriety. It's easy to justify that. You might say, hey, you know, business is business. I have to act this way. Maybe, but not necessarily. All that sharp business behavior probably contributed to your addiction in the first place. It's a good idea to take a hard look at yourself and figure out how you can be the best possible person in all ways, including in business. Harmony and unity and spiritual mindset between work and AA will make your recovery stronger. And what I will say is, if your business life is pushing you in the direction of dishonesty, you're in the wrong business. And I think that we can learn a lot from people in the program who deliberately choose to do work that is not stressful for them in this way. It often means making less money, but they understand that the recovery comes first. And I have a lot of respect for people like that, people who can focus on recovery and do a job that's less stressful. It doesn't require them to be overly hard-edged so that they can stay sober and have serenity. Leviticus 25:35 says, if your brother becomes impoverished and his means falter in your proximity, you shall strengthen him, proselyte or resident, so that he can live with you. So this is an exhortation to be charitable with your fellow if he falls on hard times. It's a pretty reasonable idea, something that a lot of people do even without being told by the Bible. Yet, a lot of us, including myself, are pretty impressive in our abilities to ignore our fellows who need help. Now, in some ways, both approaches are correct. We may want to help everybody, but we cannot. If you gave $100 to every impoverished person you met, you would soon be impoverished yourself, I would assume, unless you're a billionaire. In fact, the Bible commands us not to give away more than 20% of our money for charity. So what's the best thing to do? Well, one approach is to give money to organizations that know how to distribute it fairly. There's a tradition of helping fellow recovering addicts out financially, though there's an equally valid tradition of warning people that AA is not a lending society. Sober people are under no obligations to lend money to one another, and in fact, making loans can be quite harmful, causing resentment, people avoiding meetings, that kind of thing. In fact, I know a guy in the program, a very wise elder person, who said when he meets a new person who needs money, he says he gives him $20. He said, this is not a loan, it's a gift. I don't ever want to get it back, because he just immediately gets rid of any sort of tension that, oh, this guy's going to worry that, you know, he won't be able to pay me back and won't want to come to meetings. Leviticus 25:36-25:38 says, do not take from him, meaning an impoverished fellow, do not take from him interest and increase, and you shall fear God and let your brother live with you. Do not give him your money for interest, and do not give your food for increase. I am God, your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan to be God unto you. So again, we have this juxtaposition of two ideas. God is telling us not to exploit one another with interest on loans, and he's saying, I'm God who took you out of Egypt. Now, these two ideas are connected. Okay. In fact, if in many Jewish communities, you have what's called an interest-free loan society, which is where you can get an interest-free loan if you need one. But interesting, I will tell you that if you do want to get an interest-free loan, you need a guarantor, because it's not a money giveaway society, it is a loan society, but the concept is you don't have to pay interest. What this verse is also saying is the only reason we have any money to lend in the first place is because God took us out of slavery and gave us a place to live, a lush land to farm and grow rich. So if we think even for a second that somehow our good fortune is of our own making, to the point where we can use our money to exploit others who are less fortunate, we're in trouble. Okay, this can be a difficult ideal to live up to constantly. Many of us confuse the hard work we do to earn our money with being solely responsible for our own success. Well, it's both. You have to do the work, and you have to be responsible in your own life up to a point, but it is God that decides if we are to be rich or poor. And one of the big tests in recovery is to balance ego with spiritual wellness and self-confidence with humility, meaning that, you know, you have to work hard, do your part, and God will do the rest. And it's a balancing act to keep that straight in recovery.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com